say the things I wanna say. If you and I were left alone, instead of talking on the phone, I've tried to speak to you in code, so that no one else will know. But the band's all in the I'm always searching for a way to say the things I'd like to say. The little details of my mind are just static on the line. I've tried it underneath my can't get the full effect. I've tried to whisper in your ear, but that's not what you wanna hear. You wanna hear me say what I really wanna say.
Sunday morning and the sky is gray. No use laying round in bed all day. I'm stepping down to the hotel bar. Here I go and there you are. Moonlight lady in a round of spell. Pushing 50.
I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Hello and welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might be listening in Nova Scotia at Axe Radio Canada or online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. Thank you for tuning in and happy Monday. I hope you're having a wonderful week so far. Today we're going to be talking about Being You, Changing the World. That is the latest book by Dr. Dane here. And Dr. Dane, quite a few years ago, back in 2000, he was a seemingly successful chiropractor, but under the surface, he was deeply depressed, and he came to a point in time where he was ready to end his life. And he set a date for himself and was actually able to find a way to heal from that. And it is called Access Consciousness. And now Dr. Dane travels all over the world facilitating advanced classes on this modality, Access Consciousness. And within Access, he's developed a unique energy process for change for individuals and groups called the Energetic Synthesis of Being. And so we're going to be talking all about his book, Being You, Changing the World, a handbook for generating infinite possibilities and dynamic change. Welcome to the show, Dr. Here.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be with you.
Thank you. Am I pronouncing your name right, Dane?
Yes, here? You're doing great.
Thank you. Yay. Okay. Well, let's start out a little bit with this whole dark side, because I feel like a lot of people, we talk about the dark night of the soul. So what was going on for you? You're this young chiropractor, seems like you have everything going for you, yet you were miserable.
Yeah, that's exactly what was going on. And, here I was living in Santa Barbara, having a chiropractic practice and a beautiful girlfriend, and everybody telling me, wow, your life is so perfect. And I was like, well, why do I feel like I'm dying inside? And, you know, I was just tired of the struggle, sort of this emotional struggle, the struggle to make ends meet financially, the struggle to make relationships work. And I was like, I knew life didn't have to be a struggle, but that's basically all I saw around me. And I got to a place where I said, universe, you have 6 months. Either my life really changes or I'm out of here, and I really don't care which it is. And within a week, I came across something called Access Consciousness. I had one session, and I felt the fog lift. I remember leaving that one session, looking up and going, wow, has it always been this beautiful? Beginning of major change.
So what is, I'm reading the book, and there are a lot of great tools and tips, but what is the session? I get the impression that a session is different than what's in your book.
Well, it is actually a lot of what's in the book is a lot of what I got in that session and subsequent sessions, actually, because there's information, there are tools, sort of different ways of looking at things. And so I spent an hour with this young lady and had this work done, and using a lot of the tools that were in the book, we changed, and I also had something called bars, which is just a real gentle process where somebody holds your head for, an hour and 15 minutes. And it's sort of like defragging your hard drive and upgrading your operating system and running antivirus software and all the yuck in your life to change it.
Just by holding your head?
I know, weird, huh? Well, I had done so many weird things prior to that. and the idea was that there are these 32 points in the head. They have names like, money, body, sexuality, creativity, aging. And the points of view around whatever those things are, whether it's money or body or aging or any of that, they sort of lodge in our world. It's strange, but, we go from happy little children and we start walking through the world, and it's almost like we just pick up all this stuff that is all the points of view around us. And by the time we get later in life, it's like, where did the happy little child go? And basically what this does is undoes the positive and negative charge of all of those things that are sort of sticking you and glomming you.
That's interesting, because in your book, you reveal that when you were a child, you grew up in the ghetto, and yet your grandparents were quite well off. And as you were saying that perception of children, I remember we were quite poor growing up. My mother, I won't get into the details, but I never realized we were poor until my mom told me.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. I didn't realize I was white until somebody came up and told me, basically, or yelled at me for it at the time, But the first time I realized I was even a different color, different than the little kids around me, was when I was 8 years old, when somebody came up and yelled at me for being a different color. What are you doing here? And I was like, I live right over there. What do you mean? What am I doing here? But it's true. It's like, as little kids, we don't have all this crap, basically. And we learn to adopt it, I guess, because everybody else seems to. And for me, it was weighing me down so much, it was literally a reason for me wanting to leave, to end my life. And at this point, I'm really grateful I didn't. This was 14 years ago. And I mean, I see what people would call miracles in a daily basis when I get to work with people. And so I know they're possible, not just for me, but for anybody who's willing to have the possibility exist in their world.
Now, Dane, I have battled with depression since I was a child, and I also volunteer at a suicide prevention hotline. So not everyone is lucky enough to have come across something that magically makes them better. So what makes you so different than these other people who are struggling for decades? You hear these people who are chronically suicidal because their lives are just so hard. What's different for you?
Well, I guess it's that I have the tools. You know, I have the tools to change it that actually work at the source of what's causing the problem. And so for one example, with the depression that you speak about, that we both have experienced, it's like one of the things that we found in Access Consciousness is that literally 98% of your thoughts, feelings, and emotions don't belong to you. You're picking them up from everyone else around you and have been since you were tiny, ever since you got here, basically. You're like, because we tend to resonate with other people, and we tend to be like tuning forks. So when we live around people who have a particular vibration, whether it's depressed or suicidal or lonely or poverty-stricken, we tend to mimic that later in life, but it's not actually us. And so there's a real simple question you can ask. This is just one piece of getting over the depression puzzle. But if when you notice yourself having one of those bad days or bad moments, you want to ask, who does this belong to? Whether to every thought, feeling, and if you'll do it to every thought, feeling, emotion, judgment, depression, sadness, heaviness you have for 3 days, at the end of 3 days, you walk around like you're in a walking, talking meditation. There's actually space in your head. And so this is just one tool, but if you're walking around trying to deal with the 100% of stuff that's in your head, rather than recognizing that 98% of it is just something you're aware of in other people's worlds, makes your life a lot more difficult than it has to be.
Mm. That's interesting. Now, you also talk, Dr. Heer, about there are different types of people on the planet. I mean, we all know we all have different views of the world and personalities, but these people who pick up the 98% of the stuff going on in their head, are they more sensitive than other people, or is this just across the board, everyone has this going on?
Well, I'd say there are a lot of people that have it going on. I would say probably everybody has it going on to some extent, but there are certain people who are a lot more sensitive, and what I find is those tend to be the healers of the world. The people who are so empathic, they are so aware of the pain in the world a lot of times, but they want to take it on. They would do anything they could to change it. And those are the ones who tend to be the sensitives in the world. And they're also the ones that tend to be the effect of the meanness and unkindness that other people direct at them, and more so than other people. So when you combine those things, the sensitivity that somebody who is a healer, or just if you want to, you know, refer to them as a sensitive or somebody who has this sensitive capacity for picking up on things, you have that on the one hand, and then you have this 98% of stuff that they're sensitive to isn't actually theirs. It becomes this 1-2 punch for them that creates these cycles that they believe they can't get out of. And what I found, though, is those sensitive people are actually the seekers of the world, the people who have looked for a greater world usually since they were really tiny, and nobody's ever given them the tools they need to create it without taking it on. And that's where this work comes in also.
So, well, there's so many questions I want to ask you, but maybe we should take a step back and talk about how you want people to use this book. Do you read it cover to cover, or how do you want people to really get the full benefit of Being You, Changing the World?
Well, what I would say is first I would read the introduction, or I mean you can go, there's the introduction is online free, me reading it. If you go to beingyoubook.com, it's beingyoubook.com. It's like a 55 minute audio of me reading the intro and the first chapter of the book. So, you know, try that, see if that, and if it speaks to you at all, then you might want to get the book. But if you have it, and what I would suggest is after reading the intro in the first chapter, there's a tool in there, something called a clearing statement that you can start to use right away, that basically when something comes up, you go POC and POD all that, POC, POD, POD, which basically stands for going back to the point of creation of wherever you created what's sticking you, and asking it to dissolve. And it does, because ask and you shall receive is something that actually works. I think they just hid it in the Bible so nobody would believe that it works. So I would say read and start there. Start using that tool. But then after that, I would say you got two choices. Either pick it up and turn to a section and see something that inspires you, because usually you'll know right where to go, and it'll be just the thing in your life that is touching you right now. And most of the sections have a tool associated, so start using that tool, and then I'd go back and read it cover to cover to get all the tools that you can.
Okay, because I'm looking at all the tools, and they're definitely useful tools, but then me being kind of a perfectionist, judgmental, you know, judging myself kind of person, I'm like, how am I going to learn all these tools? I feel like the only thing I could do is maybe have one or two that I'd work on for a couple of weeks.
Well, I would actually suggest that. And so if you get to a place where there's a tool that particularly resonates with you, what I would say first is realize there are going to be some tools that really resonate with you right now and some are not at all. So if you get to a tool that particularly resonates, use it for those couple of weeks. You can keep reading the book if you want to and write down the other tools or dog-ear the pages, you know, or fold the pages over so that you know where to reach them next. But I think part of the invitation that the book itself is, you know, it's called Being You, Changing the World, which is, it's really, how would it work for you? So if you look at it and recognize, okay, I need to take a tool because I'm such a perfectionist, I need to use it for 2 weeks, I need to see how it works, that's exactly the way you want to do it. And allow that. Another, you know, and somebody else might be like, okay, I'm going to use the tool right now, and I'm going to use another one at lunch, and I'm going to use another one at dinner. So you sort of, they would go through the book differently.
Interesting. Because I feel, and you talk about this, the how we judge ourselves.
Yes.
Because I would be like, I have to get it right. If I'm not doing it right, then it's not worth doing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the funny part, because what is right? You know what I mean? We unfortunately, it's like we walk around with such an intense set of judgments of ourselves that we've learned, you know, it's as though we've learned that if we're not judging us, then we're not making forward progress. Or if we're not judging us, we're going to hurt other people. Or if, you know, fill in the blank, if we're not judging us, then blank. And we have these reasons and justifications for all of these judgments we have of us, including, you know, if I'm not doing it right, I might as well not be doing it all. But in this, there truly is no right, because what you'll notice is, let's say you go and do it your way, which is the way you know will work for you right now, what'll happen is it will start to change what you call your way. Because every one of us who has a way, that's not the only way, that's just the way that we've learned things work, and the universe has a multitude of ways we can do things. So as you use these tools, the basis that created that as your only way of functioning will start to shift and change, and then you'll find all kinds of other ways you can do things.
I don't know. I think my way is the right way, and you guys should all just learn my way.
I know. Wouldn't the world be great? It's like, if you were God, wouldn't the world be a wonderful place?
Yeah.
It's like, hello, why are you not doing it my way?
Well, that's another thing that you and pretty much every teacher of self-improvement is like, if you're going to depend on everyone else figuring out how you want things done, and that's what you depend your happiness on, you're going to be pretty miserable.
Yeah. And it is, you know, it's because you can't be anybody else. And I know that sounds so simple, you know, and it's real easy to say, but the difficulty is, if you can imagine just this one thing, if you can imagine 98% of your thoughts, feelings, and emotions that have been in your head since you were born are not yours. So what if 98% of your points of view aren't yours either? And if you try to live according to somebody else's point of view 98% of the time, how difficult is it to actually become successful and happy?
That brings up another question when you talk about the asking, who does this belong to? You know, some of us are going to get an answer. You gave a story about a guy who'd just taken one of your classes and he was in the grocery store and the woman had a sore back. I don't know if you want to tell the story, but he said just instinctively to her, well, who does this belong to? And she said, my husband. And then she was able to reach down and pick up the thing she couldn't get because of her sore back. Now, so some people are going to instantly have that answer. Oh, it belongs to my grandmother or the guy who pumped my gas this morning. But is everyone going to get that when they ask, who does this belong to? Or is it just more like the practice of asking that question that's important?
Well, what I would say is, by and large, most people won't get an answer because they don't even know who it belongs to. You know, it could be somebody that they drove by on the way to work. It could be somebody on the other side of the planet that's thinking this or having this problem that for some reason you resonate with and tap into. So, no, most people, what it is let's say you're in the middle of sadness or unhappiness or a sense that you can't do it or anger or fear or any of these things it works on. And you say, who does this belong to? And if it lightens up at all, that's your indication that it's not yours. So the fear lessens, or the anger or the sadness lessens a little bit. That's your indication that it's not yours, that you're actually either picking up something in the world that somebody else has going on, or that you bought this particular vibration as yours a long time ago.
Okay. So it's not like I feel if I don't get an answer, then again, I'm doing it wrong. So...
Yeah, believe me, you know what, I totally understand because I used to be the exact same way. My point of view was, okay, I need to do it perfectly, I need to do it right, and if I'm not getting exactly what I think I'm supposed to be getting, then I'm doing it wrong. And it's taken me, I'll just say, a few years to get mostly past that point of view of the wrongness, and it's hardly there anymore. So I definitely understand where you're coming from, and it really isn't about getting the answer. It's about getting the lightness that comes from asking the question. And then you realize, wait a minute, okay, if this isn't mine, then I don't have to make my life revolve around this. I can choose something different. And that's where the gift comes in.
And so, and earlier on in the hour, you mentioned using that process, asking who does this belong to for all throughout the day for a few days and just sort of seeing how that changes your perspective.
Yes, and seeing how much it lightens up your world. I mean, if you're to do nothing else other than for the next few hours of whatever is left in your day today to go for everything that comes into your head, who does that belong to? And see how much of it just dissipates into thin air. It would be a cool exercise at the very least because you'd start, number one, you'd have to recognize how many thoughts you have on a daily basis, which in itself can be daunting. But number two, recognizing that when you say, who does this belong to? And they vaporize, wow, that wasn't mine, and that wasn't mine, and that wasn't mine, and that wasn't mine. And then it really opens up this cool questioning space of, then what the heck is mine if all that wasn't?
All right, well, I'll leave everyone to ponder that while we take a break. It's time for a break now, and we are speaking with Dr. Dane here. He is the author of Being You, Changing the World. And you can hear an audio version of the introduction and the first chapter if you go to beingyoubook.com. That's beingyoubook.com. I'm Marie Bernard. This is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul, and we'll be right back.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's nonprofit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
That's the recommended daily minimum for a healthy, active person. Easy, right? The average office worker takes only 3,000 steps a day. Enter Steptember. Challenge yourself, your co-workers or your classmates to walk, run or roll your way to 10,000 steps a day for 1 month, all for a good cause. Every step you take this September is a step towards supporting cerebral palsy associations across Canada.
Sometimes I think you're probably the finest ship ever to have sailed the Vortex.
Oh, I know, Doctor. This is the end of the world news.
So now we know.
Now we know for sure.
But why are they...
I'm waiting for you.
Indeed we are, Doctor. Thursday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and right now we're speaking with Dr. Dane here. He's the author of Being You, Changing the World. You can hear the introduction and the first chapter of the book at beingyoubook.com. And welcome back to the show, Dr. here.
Thanks, Marie.
Yay. So let's talk. You're going to be in Toronto. The show is in Vancouver, but you're going to be in Toronto on July 31st teaching an advanced class of access consciousness. So can you tell us a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, it's actually called the Symphony of Possibilities. And the way it came about was I'd been facilitating access classes for a number of years, but when before I started facilitating access classes, I had done an access consciousness workshop, and I had the founder come into my office and ask for a session. I was a chiropractor at the time, and he said, the first two levels of what you do doesn't work on me. You need to go straight to the third level. And I went, oh my gosh, what do I do? And, you know, being a doctor, I said, I've just started studying that level of the work, and being psychic, he knew I was lying. And he said, look, just ask my body what it wants. Follow the energy. You'll know what to do. And there was this energy that came through that I'd never experienced before. But what it did was it started creating changes in his body. And he got up 45 minutes later, and after flopping on the table like a fish, like nothing I'd ever seen before, I'm standing 15 feet away from him, and his body is moving on the table as though it's getting electric jolts. And he got up, and he went, oh, my God, I'm going to live. Because before he came, he knew he was on the descent toward death, and something I did changed it. And since that session, I realized that we all have these capacities that we have hidden within us, basically, because nobody's ever coaxed them out or shown us how we can use those. And that's what the Symphony of Possibilities is what are the possibilities that are lying within you if you actually allow yourself to set them free, but from a place of your connection with the universe all around you. And I know that it's so funny, because as I say it, I realize that can just sound so airy-fairy. What does it mean? Well, it means, like, let's say your kid has come home because, you know, they got in a fight on the playground. So they're in emotional turmoil, they're in physical turmoil, their body hurts, and you put your arms around them, and 20 minutes later, their body no longer hurts and their emotional turmoil is gone. That's just one tiny example of the capacities that open up in people as they do this work.
And so when you say it's an advanced class, does that mean that people have to have taken other classes in order to take this one?
Unfortunately for this one, it does. Or fortunately, as the case may be, because it allows sort of a greater depth and breadth. One of the things that Access Consciousness gives you is the awareness that change is actually possible, that we actually can change the things in our lives and in our bodies, because it works on both, that we've probably always been wanting to. And so there's a certain level of awareness that change is possible that people need to have before they can sort of jump in and use this to be able to work on other people and themselves.
All right. Thank you.
My pleasure.
So I wanted to, this isn't really an exercise, but I found the pebble in the ocean analogy kind of really helpful. Do you recall that one? I can refer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so what happens is what most of us tend to do is we tend to occupy very little space. In other words, we've got this idea that we are just the size of our body. So would you like me to Do we have a moment to walk people through an exercise that might show them a little different something?
Absolutely.
Cool. Okay, so everybody listening, close your eyes unless you're driving, and then please don't close your eyes. But right now, just go out and touch the outside edges of you, not your body, you the being. And just notice where that seems to be. I know it's a weird question, but right there is where it is. And now go out another 100 yards further in all directions. Okay, and I guess we're in Canada, so go out another 100 meters further in all directions. And are you there too? Now, go out a kilometer further in all directions. Are you there too? And the answer, of course, is yes. And now try 100 kilometers in all directions. Are you there too? And now try 1,000 kilometers in all directions. Are you there too? And now 100,000 kilometers in all directions. And you notice that wherever you go, there you are. You can open your eyes. But wherever you go, there you are. And so what you realize is a being that big could not fit inside of a body this small. So you are not inside of your body. Your body is actually inside you, the being. And when you have emotional turmoil, what happens is we get really close to our bodies to try to figure things out. Like we want to focus on the details and see what's going on and try to figure out the details. But we know that doesn't work, but we've never been taught anything else. Well, if instead you just ask, okay, I'm going to allow myself to expand out 100,000 kilometers in all directions right now, what would happen is the thoughts, feelings, and emotions that have been pelting you will become like a pebble in the ocean. You know, a pebble has very little effect in the ocean. But when you get really close to your body and make your being really small, it's like everybody's thoughts, feelings, and emotions. It's kind of like a boulder in a toilet. You know, a boulder has a large impact in a toilet. A pebble has very little impact in the ocean. So the more space you occupy, the easier you can walk around the world. And it's a really easy, practical exercise to go, okay, right now I'm just going to occupy 100,000 kilometers. And you'll notice you'll breathe easier too. So it's a way of making things easier, basically, giving you some breathing space.
Thank you for that. That's awesome.
Cool. Well, I hope people use it, because I know some of this stuff can sound, you know, especially if you haven't done this kind of work, it's like it can sound a little like, right, like that'll work. But really, if you try it in the middle of some of the most difficult situations you could imagine, all of a sudden things can change. And that's what I'm interested in, is the change that people can create in their own lives. Because when you create it in your own life, it's yours. And you can offer that gift to other people. And then our world changes.
So I'd like to talk about, you mentioned how we get really small and we focus on the details. And so I'd like to talk about the difference between thinking and understanding and awareness. Because we do tend to think and think and think. And if thinking really solved that many things, we'd all be perfect already, because I know we all think a lot.
Yeah, so true. And the thing is, you know, there's a difference between awareness and understanding. And what happens with understanding is we have to stand under something and hold it up and try to see all sides of it. But we're standing there holding it, trying to figure it out, rather than allowing ourselves to tap into our knowing. And so it's like you said, you know, if thinking solved our problems, we would have a lot fewer problems. But what thinking does is it ends up putting us in this endless loop that actually takes us from the awareness that would solve or change the problem. And so one of the things I ask people is, which is quicker, knowing or thinking? Marie?
Well, I guess knowing, but I don't know, so.
Exactly. That's the thing that kills us, is we've been taught that we don't know when we do. And so the thing about it is knowing is actually instantaneous, and you can know things that you could never even think about, because thinking is based on previous experience. Your mind is like this. Your mind is like a big... Remember back in libraries when they used to have card catalogs before everything was done on computer?
Yeah.
You know, when you were a little kid and you'd go and you'd pull out this long old card catalog and you'd get the Dewey Decimal Number, you know, for the thing. Your mind is like that. It's this big old card catalog filled with every experience you've ever had and every judgment you've ever had about every experience you've ever had and every point of view you've ever taken about every experience you've ever had. And when something new comes in, it goes through every card in the card catalog and goes, okay, what do we do with this one? And it will match a previous point of view if something is in there already from the past, or if it isn't, it just rejects it. It says, no, this is bad, this is wrong, because this is not anything we know. And unfortunately, because we've been taught to function from thinking instead of knowing, we end up believing that that's the way the world has to be, but it doesn't. It's like thinking is inferior to knowing. Your knowing can give you things that you never imagined were possible because you can know things that you've never had direct experience of.
All right, well, that brings me, thank you for that, Dr. Heer. But that brings me to another question. You mentioned the lightness and the heaviness, and that's one of the ways that you know. Maybe you can explain that really quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's true always makes you feel lighter. A lie always makes you feel heavier. And it's sort of a real simple concept, you know, and sometimes it takes a while for us to get it because the funny part is, once again, we've never been taught that we just know. We've been taught we have to learn, we have to give the teacher's answer, we have to figure it out, we have to check off all the boxes, except, like, for example, have you ever, and maybe I shouldn't ask you this personally, but let's just put it as a general question to everybody listening. Have you ever known not to go out with somebody when they asked you out and said yes anyway?
Yes.
Of course, right? And did it turn out just as badly as you knew it would?
Yep.
Yeah, it does every time, right? But that's because we know. Like, we know these things. We know what it's going to create. But because we've been taught that there's this set of criterion and checkboxes for everything in our lives. So if you take that example, you're like, okay, well, he looks the right part. He drives the right car. He said the right things. He doesn't totally look like a stalker or a psychopath. Check, 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 you know? And then you say yes based on all that, rather than that little voice in your head or in your gut that went, no, don't do it. And you don't know why it's not going to turn out well, because the reason things turn out well or don't are totally non-logical. They sort of have their own organic way of being. So it could be something totally different than what you thought that would be the reason for it not turning out well, but you know. And that's the important part to get. And what you want to recognize is if you go back and apply this tool of light and heavy, when the person asked you out, if you went, wow, did that make me feel lighter or heavier? And you'd get heavy. That's an example of what's true for you or what will actually work for you makes you feel lighter. What's a lie for you or what won't work for you makes you feel heavier, because we know. Darn it, that knowing thing again.
Okay, well, that brings up another question, because a lot of people who, as an example, who experience anxiety, they are a lot of times taught to not necessarily, like, because they'll just avoid everything. And so you have to start, like, just facing the things that make you feel uncomfortable. So how do you balance something like that with, because that's sort of where I've been. I've gone out with lots of guys that I didn't really want to go out with because I was trying to sort of get practice and face discomfort and build up a tolerance for dealing with difficult people, essentially. And yet I don't necessarily feel like I'm any better at it with all of this practice that I've had.
Okay, so I got to say, I do admire your courage, however. You know, your willingness to go, hey, I'm gonna stare this one in the face. It's not going to own me. And so that right there creates a different cascade of events in your life, which is this really cool thing, because you will eventually get over it. But one of the things you want to look at is that, well, what I do with somebody is, like in the case of anxiety, for example, is I talk to them about what's really going on, not what they think is going on or what they've been taught is going on. And how that works is, like in the case of anxiety, for example, how much anxiety, like, do you know, so it's sort of that social anxiety idea, you know, the social anxiety disorder they talk about, SAD, which I think is a great acronym for it. So was there somebody else in your life that actually had that? mom, dad, a good friend, or somebody like that?
Well, I don't so much have well, I guess I have some. I mean, everyone feels some anxiety in social situations sometimes, but I was more using the anxiety as an example. For me, it's more depression. And yes, my mom had depression. I grew up in foster care. I was abused. So like there's all of this evidence that goes through my mind every day of why I should still be depressed.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So you asked, one of the things is you asked before about the bars. You know, you said you can really get that by somebody touching your head. And I'm like, yeah, because what it does is it breaks those circuits. It basically it dissipates the circuits that cause you to continually go back to all of that evidence for the reasons of being depressed. And it starts to open up actually a sense of space in your life. And so that's one aspect of it. But so when you talk about your mom having had depression, you know, growing up in foster families and that sort of thing, there's so many things that you grow up around that sort of shape the way you look at life after that, but they don't have to in the same way. In other words, if you can look and go, okay, because one of the things I found with people who grew up around depressed parents is they mimic that energy of depression. What we do is we mimic the way our parents are. It's called biomimetic mimicry. We mimic the energies that our parents have. And so what I would do with somebody who had that is I would, you know, do a combination of things, but one of them is actually verbal processing to undo and unlock the necessity of mimicking all of those points of view, all of those energies, all of those things that are the things that you grew up around, because anything you grew up around, you'll spot it in the world. It's like if you grew up around angry parents, you will spot anger. If somebody walks, you know, 100 meters behind you, you'll turn around and go, okay, where's that angry person that I need to defend myself from? Because you can pick up on the energies of it. And so what this becomes then is how do we have the tools to get to what's actually underneath there? One of which being, okay, all this other stuff that you picked up and mimicked as you were growing up. And then how do you have the awareness of what is true for you beyond it? And that's equally as important.
It's interesting you bring that up because I remember when I was a kid, always, you know, I mean, kids feel like they're sort of the center of the universe. And that's sort of the natural way that kids are. And then they're told over time, like I remember being told that I was, you know, ugly or that I was, you know, just all of these negative things. And I can recall not believing that, like thinking, well, that doesn't feel accurate to me at that time. And then of course you hear it enough times and you start to believe it.
Yeah.
But I do have the awareness of there was a point in time when that actually didn't even make sense to me. I was like, well, what do you mean?
Yeah. That's your awareness. That's your awareness that you have as a kid. And then like you said, exactly what happens is you hear it enough times and you go, oh, this must be true. Otherwise I wouldn't keep hearing it. And what you're actually hearing is other people's projections, expectations, separations, judgments, their rejections, all of their points of view about, you know, about reality, basically, that they're putting on you. So what we do in that case is it's like every time. So one of the things I would ask somebody to do is I'd go, okay, you know, I talked about the tool that's in the intro in the first chapter, the Pock and Pod. And, you know, it's this long old statement that I don't want to bother saying because I don't want to bother explaining. But basically, it's like what you want to do is you want to go, okay, so you know what? Everything I did to make that true in any way, I'm willing to now destroy it and uncreate it, meaning take my creative energy out of it and pock and pot it all. And every time it comes up, every time any aspect of you're ugly or you're stupid or you're wrong comes up, you go, you know what? Uh-uh. Destroy and uncreate it, pock and pot it. And or all that weird stuff Dane would say, or all that weird stuff that weird guy on the radio would say. And it'll still work because it's been done enough times by enough hundreds of thousands of people around the world to where it actually has an energy that you can call on to start creating change. And I think that's so necessary. One of the things that Access Consciousness is a way of changing those things that we never thought we could change, that we've been saddled with since we were growing up, that, you know, we're still living with and looking for a way to get out of. We can literally ask the energy to go back there and change it, and it does.
Okay, that brings up another question. I'm glad you brought that up, because the Pock and Pod thing, you mention it throughout the book. I'm actually curious why it's sort of in an appendix at the end of the book rather than right at the beginning, since you use it on almost every page.
Exactly. Well, because I wanted the people that wanted an explanation of it to be able to have a place where they could find the explanation of it. But I wanted the people who just wanted to use it to be able to just go through and use it. So that's why it's at the end of the book. And, you know, in hindsight, would I have done it differently? Possibly. What are you going to do?
Well, there's a note about it. I mean, you can go look. And
exactly.
Yeah, it's right at the beginning of the book is mention of where you can find more information. But so I'm reading the book, and after, like I said, almost on every page, there is mention of this Pock and Pod, this clearing statement. But I don't feel, as I'm reading it, I mean, I see the value in the book, and I'm still not feeling like any relief from all of my these things that are holding me back. So what am I doing wrong?
Unfortunately, it might have something to do with your functional point of view is what am I doing wrong? You know, and that's so what I would consider looking at, see, for me, it's one thing to, you know, to create a book for sort of the largest impact it can have on the largest number of people. And it's like, you can read it and you go, like you said, you know, it's like, okay, I totally get the value of the book, but I'm not feeling it. What am I doing wrong? It's like, sometimes somebody needs to hold our hand a little bit and walk with us a little bit deeper underneath the surface of what hasn't been possible and what hasn't been changeable, to help us change it, to know that it's okay to feel. So couple things. Number one, we tend to put our lives in the context of feeling. What do I feel? How do I feel? And or like when you do these processes, you go, I'm not feeling it. Except, see, when I first came to Access, I didn't feel these processes either. It was probably 6 months of doing processes for, I don't know, I was doing several of them a day. And I didn't feel a thing. It wasn't until 6 months later I was running a process, or somebody was running one in a class, and I sort of took this little breath and I went, oh, that's how I know something's happening. When I feel myself go, ah. So it's actually less about feeling it than it is about letting the energy change what's going on for you. And some of us have been so inundated with other people's stuff, with things we've tried to heal in others, with ways we've tried to sort of disconnect from what we feel or what we're aware of, because we've had such a high level of awareness and we've been in things like foster homes and experienced things as you have, that there's sort of this barrier between us and wanting to feel again. That barrier can be changed, but it's got to be a conscious choice on one's part and a willingness to do it. And that's the thing is the book speaks to sort of the seekers of the world. And one of the things is some of those of us who are the seekers, the people looking for something different, have been kind of damaged by this world by our own admission. And it is changeable. We just have to be willing to choose whatever path is going to create that change for us when we're willing to.
Hmm. It's interesting you mention that, because I feel like I do all of this work. I mean, I've been doing this show now for 6 years, and I've been on a personal growth journey for a very long time, and I work so hard. Like, I don't think anybody would deny how hard I work on myself, how hard I try, and the effort that I put in. And yet it always seems to be like I'll try something for a while and either that won't work or it leads me down another path. And I just feel like there's never one clear path that I'm on.
My sweet dear, let me just say I totally understand. It's actually why I wrote the book. And the reason I say that is because I also am a seeker, and it's like I also was one of the people that would work so hard with everything I had done and still got to the place 14 years ago where I was going to kill myself if things didn't change, because none of what I was doing was producing enough of the result I required. And so believe me, I hear you. I totally understand. And I'm going to make you an offer, but I don't know if I should make the offer off the air or on the air. But I would love to contribute to you changing this if that feels, once again, you know, if it makes you feel lighter. Because I hear you, and I perceive some things in our conversation and in your world that I understand rather dynamically from a personal level, and also have been able to help people change. So, and I would never, you know, claim to know that whether it would work for somebody or not. I know that we know, but I'd be happy to do some work with you if you're interested.
Cool.
And don't answer that now.
All right.
But it's like, I just want to say, I get you. I hear you, my sister. I really do. And even that sense of this continual work with no result can be changed.
Hmm. So that brings up, I'm just going to ask you one more question before we start to wrap up. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you. So you mentioned, and of course, everyone has something different that's going to work for them. So what's the kind of person or the kind of attitude or willingness that is going to be most positively impacted by your book, being You Changing the World, and by Access Consciousness?
Well, I would say that anybody who is a seeker, anybody who is looking for something different, and they're finally at the stage in their life where they're willing to stop blaming anyone or anything else for the way things are showing up, and are willing to actually have the tools to change it, to truly create change. And I would say it both applies for the book and for Access Consciousness, whether it's classes or videos or audios, or, you know, whatever it is, I'd say the same thing applies. And it really works so well for the people that know there's something different possible. And a lot of times the people that come to Access are the people that have done everything under the friggin' sun, and it's either not worked very well for them, or it's worked but not nearly as much as they know it should, or, you know, they tried to do the goal setting thing and they just can't make that happen, because the people that Access attracts are the humanoids of the world, the people that know there needs to be something different. They oftentimes think they're judgmental, but the only person they ever judge is themselves. And they know there's got to be something different, and they've just been looking for the tools to create it. Those are the people that are usually find Access like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm home. How did I get so lucky to be here?
Well, I just want to give credit to those people. You know, you said that they've tried everything under the sun, and yet they keep trying. A lot of people just give up.
Yes. Yes. And I want to say to those people also, I'm so glad you mentioned that. I would like to say to them, please, guys, recognize the courage you have. If you are still going and still putting one foot in front of the other, even if you feel like you have more down days than up days, please keep going. You have a tremendous amount of courage. You have more courage than you've probably ever been able to acknowledge or been acknowledged for or given yourself credit for. Keep going. You will find a way to change what it is you know needs to be changed.
Thank you. Okay, well, we have just a couple minutes left in the show. I want to say right now we're speaking with Dr. Dane here. He is the author of Being You, Changing the World. If you want to hear him reading the intro and the first chapter of the book, totally free, you can go to beingyoubook.com. And I'm just wondering, before we wrap up, what's the most important thing that you want listeners to really get today?
Well, what I'd like them to really get is, you know, there are possibilities beyond what this reality around us tells us can exist. And if you're somebody who knows that but has kind of given up on it, please do not give up. if you're somebody who knows that but just hasn't seen it actualize the way you know it should, please do not give up. Part of what it requires is enough of us choosing something different before this planet and the people on it will have the choice for it. So what if you, truly being you, are the gift and the change and the possibility this world requires?
Well, what a beautiful way to wrap up the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marie. And thank you for what you're doing and bringing to the world. And I just would like to acknowledge you to everybody who continues to listen to you. What a gift you are and what a contribution you are in people's lives. Thank you for what you're doing.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. All right. Well, this was Dr. Dane here on Synchronicity. Again, if you want to hear the intro and first chapter of his book, Being You, Changing the World, you can go to beingyoubook.com. Where's the best place to buy the book?
Actually, Amazon and or Barnes & Noble online are probably the best. Or you can go to accessconsciousness.com, which is the main Access Consciousness website, and search for it in the shop.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Heer. All right. Well, this has been Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. Coming up in just a few minutes here on CITR is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Horrific. So stick around for that. And I'm going to leave you with a beautiful song from a beautiful soul, Theta Phoenix. She is a local singer-songwriter, and this is from her album Legacy. Here is Light in You on Synchronicity.
I know you're scared to be yourself sometimes. This world can be so blind, but if you take the chance to trust, start to open up, you just might find that you are loved. And I see the light in you shining with everything you do. Don't try to hide it no more. Can you hear it knocking at your door? Show me what you really want. Tell me what you really need. Reveal all you feel. You will be received. You don't have to hide away all the things you really want to say. There are others who have felt this way. You're not alone. I feel your pain. Yeah. And I see the light. Sometimes you don't know where to go. Well, everybody needs to belong. Yeah, see the light in you shining with everything you do. Don't try to hide it no more. Can you hear it knocking at your door? Thank you.
music, reggae music. It's tell you and tell the whole world, you know. Telepathically and physically and mentally and spiritually, we are telling them to this music, yeah.
So you heard it here at Rocker Show 101.9 FM CITR, featuring yours truly, George Beard, keeping the reggae music alive on the west coast of Canada. It's all about roots rock, lovers rock, dancehall reggae music on CITR Rocker Show, Sunday noon to 3 p.m. each and every Sunday. Love of Jack. For over 25 years of doing it nice, warm, and easy. Until next time, such time, keep the faith and spread it gently. Jah bless and Jah guide us. Jah out. Bless out.
Blueprint Live, the Georgia Strait, and CITR present Bad Bad Not Good with special guest Sabota, Tuesday, August 12th at Venue Nightclub.